5 seconds. 4, 3, 2. Log Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your radio of reason, an independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday, October 21st, 2007, is now about 8.01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. Here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now, on to our program. Good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call this evening to 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments while on the air. At other times, you may call 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. Of course, you can send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. We'll try to respond to your questions during our next live broadcast. In addition to accessing Liberty Talk Radio from our website, you may now access broadcasts from blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that too is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. Critical during these tumultuous financial times. This evening, ladies and gentlemen, we had an open mic this morning, but we are going to have a surprise. This evening, we're having William Redpath, the National Chairman of Libertarian Party, with us. He should be calling in a couple of minutes. And let me give you his introduction before he calls in. Mr. Redpath has been a member of the Libertarian Party since 1984, having run for office three times, including being Libertarian candidate for the governor of Virginia in 2001. He is a member of the Libertarian National Committee, Inc., and former chairman of the Libertarian Party of Virginia. Mr. Redpath was ballot access chair of the Libertarian Party from 1990 to 1997, successfully leading the party to 50 state ballot access for his presidential tickets in both 1992 and 1996. And that's no small feat, ladies and gentlemen. This was the first time that the United States... A United States minor political party qualified its presidential ticket for the ballot in all states in successive elections. Professionally, Mr. Redpath is vice president with BIA Financial Network, Inc., which offers merchant banking and financial and strategic advisory services to the media, telecommunications, and related industries. Mr. Redpath earned his BA degree in economics and political science from Indiana University's MBA is from the University of Chicago. He is a certified public accountant in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Very good. He is now the national chairman of the Libertarian Party and also on the board of directors of Fair Vote. And let me tell you about Fair Vote. I was unfamiliar with them until they directed me to his website, which is fairvote.org. And let me read this short blurb to you, this introduction. Founded in 1992 and operating for many years as a center for voting and democracy, Fair Vote is the leading national organization acting to transform our elections to achieve secure and universal access to participation, a full spectrum of meaningful choices, and majority rule with fair representation and a voice for all. Achieving our goals, it says, rest upon bold but achievable reforms, a constitutionally protected right to vote, a national popular vote for president, instant runoff voting for executive elections and proportional voting for legislative elections. As you know, we have talked about our voting system and the reason why, in some cases, I don't vote at all. Because if I don't like either candidate, I do not, and I refuse, I will not vote for the lesser of two evils. And then I'll be blamed to say, well, you voted for him. I think we have someone on the air. Let's see who it is. You're on the air. This is Liberty Talk Radio.
Hello, Joe.
Yes.
It's Bill Redpath.
Bill, thank you so much. I just finished your introduction, not only your personal introduction, but that with the mission of the FairVote.org organization. So I want to thank you so much for taking your time to be on our program. We consider it an honor and a privilege, and I sincerely mean that. Thank you for being with us, especially on a Sunday evening when everyone else is winding down.
Well, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on your program.
Thank you so much. Bill, I understand that you are now chair of the Libertarian Party,
itself,
the National. Very good. Okay, I said that, and I wanted to make sure I corrected myself. If I had to, I'd do it up front. One other thing, Bill, before I forget, if later on you would email me your mailing address and T-shirt size, I'd like to send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Very good. And you can wear it 24 hours a day if you want. It's okay with me. Well, Bill, I understand you're coming to the state of Oklahoma. And
I'm actually in Oklahoma.
Are in Oklahoma now. Where are you? What city are you in?
I'm in Norman.
Oh, Norman. Okay. That's just near Oklahoma City. Very good. Well, maybe we can start off, Bill, since I've already given your introduction, so people are listening to know who you are. Would you tell us why are you here in Oklahoma, and what do you expect to achieve?
Well, I'm here in Oklahoma to assist with the initiative to lower the signature requirements to qualify a political party, and also to lower the vote retention percentage to keep a political party on the ballot in Oklahoma. I'm out here to assist Oklahomans. I have been out with Oklahomans the whole time, assisting in the petitioning effort, I also will be speaking at a dinner in Oklahoma City that will be a fundraiser for Oklahomans for Ballot Access Tuesday evening in Oklahoma City. So I'm out here for another week to assist in this process in any way I can out here. It's very important that we succeed in getting 77,000 and change, I forget the exact figure, but it's between 77,000 and 78,000 valid signatures on this initiative within a 90-day period. I believe today is day 6, I believe, of the 90-day window that we have. And it's going to be a challenge. It is a challenge, but I think ultimately we will succeed and then get the initiative passed by the people of Oklahoma to bring some sort of sanity to the ballot access laws in this state.
Well, that's it always mystified me why we were so archaic in our thinking regarding ballot access. Have you been given any insight into that?
I don't know what to say. It's my understanding that up until 1974, the old law was 5,000 signatures. That is, you can qualify a political party for the ballot with 5,000 signatures. I believe it was in 1974 that the Oklahoma legislature greatly increased the signature requirement to qualify for the ballot in this state. And there has been lobbying, I mean, literally decades of lobbying with the Oklahoma legislature. There has been litigation on this matter. Both of those have failed, and so we've gone basically to the last resort here, and that is to circulate an initiative and put it before the people in Oklahoma to allow them to decide sometime in 2008 whether they want to reduce the ballot access laws in this state. We just want to turn it back to 5,000 signatures, valid signatures of registered voters to qualify a political party for the ballot in this state, and then change it, instead of having to pull 2% of the vote for president or governor, to change it to 2% of the vote for any statewide office in either of the last two statewide elections to retain ballot status.
Right.
So this will make it a far more competitive democracy. As a matter of fact, Oklahoma in 2004 was the only state where only Harry were on the ballot for president. And they don't allow write-ins in Oklahoma. So consequently, people in Oklahoma had three choices for president: either vote for Bush or vote for Kerry or don't vote for president in 2004. And that's the situation we're trying to change.
Well, I ran in the, I was fortunate to run for U.S. Congress representing the first congressional district here in Tulsa, under the Libertarian Party, and that was the last time the Libertarian Party was, in fact, listed as a party, and now it's just a political organization. And I was involved also with the Libertarian Party, but it was very difficult to organize, especially when you're not a recognized party. People have little interest because there's nothing to attach to. And I found that very frustrating. This is going to be an arduous task. This is going to be very, very difficult, I suspect. What do you think your chances are this year of winning this thing?
In ballot access? Enough signatures?
Yeah.
It's not going to be a slam dunk by any means. In certain respects, it's an uphill battle, but I think it is one that can be successfully accomplished.
How do you expect to accomplish it? Will it just be from members of the Libertarian Party going out?
No. There are, first of all, we have raised significant funds for this. All told so far, I think something in the ballpark of $100,000 has been raised for this. So now we have retained a petitioning firm for a professional petitioning to occur. But we're also going to be very reliant on volunteers. The volunteer signatures are going to be very important in this process, and I urge everybody involved in Oklahoma, and it's not just the Libertarian Party, it's the Green Party,
right,
the Constitution Party, and independents for that.
Right.
Although this does not technically affect independents, it certainly affects the climate for candidates other than Republicans and Democrats. Mm. So anybody, we urge anybody who is concerned about politics in Oklahoma to get involved in this process and to help out on this, get signatures where they can, because every signature can ultimately make or break this initiative and can make a difference.
Okay, and what we'll do is I'll use this program also as a platform for that as well. Hopefully that'll help, although, you know, we not only reach Oklahoma, we reach, you know, worldwide. So sometimes our listenership in Oklahoma is limited. We seem to get more people in Georgia and California than we do in Oklahoma for some reason.
We certainly can accept money from outside. The organization is OBAR, Oklahomans for Ballot Access Reform, and I do know that they certainly accept donations from outside Oklahoma.
Have you had an opportunity to speak with any of our legislators regarding this issue to get their temperature on where they stand or where the legislature in general stands on it currently?
All I know is what I've heard secondhand, and I've heard a lot secondhand, but I have not personally spoken with any Oklahoma legislator on this issue. It's my understanding that generally, I just know this, that the lobbying that has occurred has not been successful in forging legislation that would reduce ballot access signature requirements to a reasonable level.
Okay. Now, if you receive enough signatures, then that's enough signatures, that would be to place the question on the ballot of whether or not we should change our ballot access requirements for the state of Oklahoma.
Right.
What is the temperature of that? How does it look that if it does get on the ballot that it would actually pass?
It's very good. There is basically the feedback on the street that I've gotten from people over the past couple of days that people are thirsting for choices on the ballot in Oklahoma. A lot of people are very much tuned into this situation. They know that the ballot is absolutely dominated by Republicans and Democrats, and they want more choices. Oklahoma has, excuse me, before I get to Oklahoma, this has come up in other states recently, Florida and Massachusetts, where voters in the recent past voted to reduce ballot access laws in Massachusetts and Florida. Florida used to be a very difficult state, and now it's one of the easiest states. They review the Constitution in Florida every 20 years, I believe, and they come up with issues, and in 2000 they came up with ballot access as something that they wanted to reform and put the vote to the people of Florida, and ballot access reform passed there, passed in Massachusetts. Oklahoma has a populist tradition that I think bodes well for passage of this, and also the Daily Oklahoman, the newspaper in Oklahoma City, has for a long time editorialized against the ballot access restrictions that have been in place in Oklahoma. They have spoken out loudly for changing the law, and I think there's little doubt in my mind that the Oklahoman and other newspapers in Oklahoma are going to come out four square behind this initiative.
Well, do you know what the position of the Tulsa World is, I guess the second largest paper in Oklahoma?
I actually don't offhand. I don't know what the position of the Tulsa World would be.
I'm embarrassed. I should know, and I don't. The office where I'm retired now, but the Tulsa World always went to the office. So since I don't go to the office, I don't read the Tulsa World as often. I read other things, so I don't know either. So we'll let that lie. Now let's assume for a second that this passes. If we get enough signatures, it passes. People voted in. In the event that there's more than one party which gets signatures, the required number of signatures, then they would be listed. Whether it be, so it's possible that in this case, in this scenario, to have the Republican, the Democrat, the Libertarian, the Green, the whatever. I mean, and all the way go down the line. You could have several parties listed on the ballot at the same time. Is that correct, or is there going to be a restriction as to the number of parties that can run?
No, there would be no restriction as to the number of parties that could run. Right now in the United States, I would say that there are three major minor parties, as it were, and I would say that those are Libertarian, Green, and Constitution. Among those, the Libertarian Party certainly historically has raised more funds and run more candidates than the other parties, but the other parties are very active. There's no question about that. The Greens and Constitution parties, the Green and Constitution parties ran presidential tickets in 2004, and in many respects they are very active. It's tough to say how many parties would ultimately qualify for the ballot in Oklahoma, but I frankly right now would be surprised if it were more than three parties other than the Republicans and the Democrats.
What is your, being a Libertarian, and I'm being a Libertarian myself, your personal opinion as to what should ballot access consist of? Forget about what the current laws are, what the norm is in America today, but if you were sort of playing God, as they say, and you can initiate the ballot access rules, what would they be? No holds barred.
I think either a modest filing fee or something in the ballpark. I don't think that it should exceed any more than, say, 0.1% of the number of voters who are eligible to vote for an office. I think that something as low as that, 0.1%, is enough to keep off candidates who are not serious, and by that I mean substantive people, even though their ideas may not be in the quote mainstream unquote, at least have a set of ideas that should be respected and should be discussed. And I think I think that level of signatures is enough to keep frivolous candidates off the ballot.
Okay, and I guess if it was just left wide open with no rule as to or restriction, some restriction whatsoever. I shouldn't say restriction, but some sort of qualification. Then even, you know, Billy Bisquick would run because, you know, he likes to drink at the local bar and he has 10 friends that'll vote for him. And I guess those are the people you want to keep off.
I'm not sure that's so. I mean, certainly there were a lot of candidates, to be fair, for the referendum in California back in the recall election when Gray Davis was being recalled. I will say that that was an unusual situation. They had over 100 candidates on the ballot for governor. But usually, for instance, in New Jersey, it's easy to get on the ballot. It's something, well, I can tell you the exact number. It's 800 valid signatures to get on the ballot for president in New Jersey. If my memory serves me correctly, I believe they had something like 9 candidates listed. I believe it's someplace in the ballpark of 9 to 11 candidates. Usually a signature requirement of 800 valid signatures. So it's not as if you know, suddenly the dam bursts and you've got several hundred people running for office. It's usually not that way.
That's interesting.
A number of candidates.
Well, they have 800, and I'm just curious. I think I'm wasting the TV, the radio time, but I wonder how they came up with 800. That's an unusual. Why not 1,000 or something like that?
Yeah, right. I can't tell you offhand how they came up with the number 800, but that is what the law says.
That's interesting. Well, and I'm surprised with 800. They didn't have 800 people running.
No, they didn't. That's just it.
That's encouraging. Now, in reading your website, fairvote.org, you're a proponent of proportional voting. Could you explain that?
Yes.
Can you, since I'm an advocate of some sort of runoff, for example, I've always been an advocate, although I'm not an expert, so I haven't studied all of the alternatives, although there's several on the table. I like the idea of people voting, I forgot what they call it, approval voting system, where you can, approve everyone or disapprove of everyone. And let me give you my logic on that. I go to the polls, but I do not vote for everyone or everything. If I do not understand the ballot or I do not understand the proposition, I will not vote for it. If I do not like either candidate, if there's just a Republican and a Democrat running and there's no independent, or if I just dislike all three of them, I will not ever vote for the lesser of two evils or three evils in that case. I would prefer just not to vote. And I have not voted more times recently than I have voted because of that, because I didn't have the choice that you're fighting for. Would you explain proportional voting to our listeners? And if you're familiar with approval voting, can you give a comparison of the two and tell me the pros and cons of each one, please?
Okay. Well, I'll put it this way: that it's proportional representation basically is where the voting is done with a multi-member district, first of all, or no district at all. People just running at large within a jurisdiction, but you're dealing with a multi-member district where ultimately the results largely reflect the percentage of votes earned by each party. There are several different methods. One is a party list system. For instance, in Costa Rica, there is a Libertarian Party in Costa Rica. They use what is called a closed party list system, where people vote only for the party. You can have an open party list system where people vote for both party and a candidate. But in this case, they have a closed party list system, and the Libertarian Party of Costa Rica, called Movimiento Libertario, and its website is libertario.org, has 6 of 57 seats in the Costa Rican national legislature, over 10% of the seats. And it is because they get about 10% of the votes cast that they are able to get about 10% of the seats. Now, here in the United States, because we have single-member district elections, if you got 10% of the vote in each single-member district, you could very well end up with zero representatives in the legislature.
That's correct, right.
In any of those individual seats. So I would say that without going on, it's difficult to explain quickly how these systems work, but they're easy. The voting is easy. It's really not difficult to vote for your favorite party or cast preferences for candidates in a proportional voting system. The problem is here for minor parties in the United States is that people say we have a two-party system. Well, that's not really quite true. We have a single-member plurality voting system, single-member legislative districts. Person with the most votes wins. And political scientists will tell you that the almost natural result of that is two dominant parties running for the center, trying to offend as few people as possible.
Correct.
So they can win these single-member district elections. And there would be much wider representation if a party earned 10% of the vote and they got 10% of the seats. We'd have a multi-party democracy where there'd be much greater representation of various views in the legislature, and I think that would be a good thing for democracy generally, and it would be a good thing for the Libertarian Party. I think you'd see in that situation libertarians in state legislatures, libertarians in Congress, and people would find it, individuals would find it much easier to find and vote for a party that really stands for what they believe in.
I see. Well, you know what? I never thought of that, but you're right. It does. So if there are six parties running, proportionally every party would get a member or proportionally their representation in the legislature.
Basically, that in the big picture, that's how it would work, yes.
Okay, now...
Now, with respect, if I could speak to approval voting for a second, I know there's a lot of disagreement in the electoral reform community about approval voting and different sorts of voting. I don't personally care for approval voting because I think it's much more important that people list their preferences. For instance, let's go back to the election year 2000.
Okay.
I voted for Harry Brown for president in 2000.
Right.
At the time, if I had a second choice, if we had instant runoff voting, and I had a second choice, frankly, I would have voted at that time. I probably would have given my number two choice to George W. Bush. Now, in 2004, I wouldn't have, I'll tell you that much. after starting the Iraq War, forget it. But the thing is this, under approval voting, I couldn't list my preferences like that. I would either have to vote yes or no. And probably in that case, I would not want to indicate that the Republican candidate ranked the same as the Libertarian.
I see.
I think there's a lot of information through ranked choices that voters can communicate about their preferences that they cannot communicate through approval voting.
I agree with that, and you've just changed my opinion because you're absolutely correct. It's still an all or nothing under the approval voting, similar to what we have now, only you're given more choices. Okay, I like that. Well, in that case, then if in Oklahoma, if we had by the way, does any municipality at this point or any state have proportional voting, or is that something that's still being proposed nationwide?
Cambridge, Massachusetts uses proportional representation, a form of proportional representation called single transferable vote, where people rank their candidates in the voting process. This is my first choice, this is my second choice, this is my third choice, as many or as few as they like among the people running. And then there is a vote transfer process, both transferring excess. It's a little difficult to explain. I will admit the vote counting process is complicated. It's fair, but it's complicated. But the actual voting process is very easy, where, again, the individual just says, this is my favorite, this is my second favorite, my third, as many or as few as they like. And ultimately, there is a vote transfer process that... reallocates excess votes for winners above a certain threshold and all votes for losing candidates who are eliminated, and there is a vote transfer process. Ultimately, I believe there are, if I'm correct, 9 people on the city council in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Not sure about that, but anyway, they use something called single transferable vote, which is also called choice voting, in some instances. Basically, it's just two different phrases for the same thing. It's also used for New York City school boards, and there was it may be adopted soon for city councils in Davis, California. It's interesting. There are the referenda to change voting systems when they come up in local elections are almost all being passed in the United States. This past November, there were referendums to for instant runoff voting in Minneapolis, in Pierce County, Washington, which is Tacoma, and in Oakland, California. They all passed. And in Davis, California, there was a non-binding referendum on changing their city council to single transferable vote, a form of proportional representation. That also passed. So when these voting reforms are being put before the voters in various localities, they are being overwhelmingly passed, usually with a vote in excess of 60% yes.
Interesting. By the way, we do have a question from Teddy from Missouri, and he asks, he says, ask Mr. Redpath what percent of vote he thinks the parties need to keep ballot access. Thanks.
It varies from state to state. In some instances, it's 10% of the vote in a statewide race, and so that's very difficult. I believe the median percentage for vote retention in this nation is it's no more than 3%, and it might be below that, actually. I once did an analysis of this, and I want to give a plug for Richard Winger for Ballot Access News. If people ought to take a look at his website, ballot-access.org, or subscribe to his Ballot Access newsletter. He is the foremost expert on ballot access in the United States, does a tremendous job promoting ballot access for all minor parties in the U.S. But he once had a list state by state. This was a few years ago, but at the time I did an analysis, and the median percentage for a statewide office to retain ballot access at the time was 3% for a statewide office. And it might be a little less than that now.
We have had several of the libertarian candidates interviewed on this program. Cubby's one. We've had my mind just went blank. I didn't write it down. If I don't write it down, I don't remember anything. But we've had three or four of them running, and I know there's about 11 or 13 libertarians who are vying for the libertarian slot for presidency. And of course, the major concern that libertarians have is, you know, although we may have a libertarian listed in most states in the union on the ballot, you know, what chance do they have? And then that automatically brings us to Ron Paul, because Ron Paul right now is speaking as a libertarian, at least, and you know as well as everyone else, he's a Republican. In fact, they just finished a debate here at 8 o'clock Central Time. How does Ron Paul play in this whole equation from your perspective?
I think Ron Paul running for president is a great thing. I have known Dr. Paul personally going back 20 years now, almost, running for president under the LP banner in 1988. And I had tremendous respect for Dr. Paul as a person, as a physician, and as a politician. And I think that the perspective that he has brought to the Republican primary process is badly needed, and I think that it's like a breath of fresh air, and I think that explains so much of his popularity with so many voters at this time, is that the man is genuine, he is honest, he is forthright, he's not holding his wet finger up to see which way the wind is blowing, and I think that that almost as much as his libertarian leanings is what is attracting people. And even The Economist magazine editorialized a couple of weeks ago that maybe his opponents for the Republican nomination should adopt some of his libertarian leanings.
Right.
I thought it was a good editorial and very well put. And I will say that Dr. Paul has gotten a lot more traction from this campaign than what I thought he would initially. It's been very impressive. frankly, I don't think the chance is very good for him receiving the Republican nomination. But he has certainly made what I think is a very positive impact for libertarianism in the process.
Then that begs the question, should there be a libertarian Republican caucus as there is today, but it's probably not very active, or should there be a separate libertarian party?
I think there should be both. I think that I don't think there is enough, there's not even close to enough libertarianism within the Republican Party for me to say, okay, well, that's it, time to close up the shop with the LP and throw our lot in with the Republican Party. I'm nowhere close to that. I think there is a role for the Republican Party. There are just far too few libertarians in the Republican Party. I certainly understand with our voting system as it is, I understand people who say, well, I'm, in so many words, I'm going to hold my nose and cast my lot with the Republican Party. But I've known so many people who have done that, and then I see them maybe a year later or something like that, and it doesn't seem to be a very satisfying experience for them generally. So I think that there is definitely a role for the Libertarian Party in the United States. I have long maintained that the Libertarian Party needs to push for electoral reform, not just ballot access reform, but electoral reform to change our democracy into one that is going to be a multi-party democracy. When that occurs, and I do think it eventually will occur in the United States, the Libertarian Party will be a major party in the United States. So however people, as long as they're working for liberty, I hope they join the Libertarian Party. And of course, you can join the party by going to our website at lp.org or calling 1-800-ELECT-US. I would hope and prefer that people decide to do this within the Libertarian Party, but if they choose to go at it through the Republican Party, I understand, even though it's not the way that I would choose to go or that I think ultimately will be the most effective.
I agree. I'm looking at the reality of the whole thing. It's got to be incredibly frustrating. I know the candidates for the Libertarian Party are working awfully hard, getting their message out, traveling, doing everything that's humanly possible with the limited funds and resources that they have available. And at the same time, most Americans have no concept of what a Libertarian Party is. I mean, you say Libertarian Party, they have no idea what you're talking about. They don't even know where to start thinking, which is a tremendous handicap. I guess I find it very frustrating because I support these Libertarian candidates, and I send them money. I even send them money. You know, here's money, do something, you know. But I in my heart, I know that the probability of them getting even a small percent of the vote is, you know, is very small. But here, Ron Paul is making a significant impact. So, you know, it's a real conundrum, I think. I mean, from my perspective, being a pure libertarian and saying, well, geez, Ron Paul may be able to pull this thing off. And, you know, so where does my vote go? I mean, I guess from your perspective, it doesn't make any difference where the vote goes, as long as it's going libertarian.
Well, I say this, that I don't want people to leave the Libertarian Party just to vote for Ron Paul in the Republican primary. I mean, Virginia has open primaries, and come February 12th, when the Virginia primary occurs, I'm going to go vote for Ron Paul. Now, we do not have registration by party in Virginia. Anybody can go in, no matter what their political persuasion, and vote for Ron Paul in the Republican primary, assuming they're a Virginia voter, and I strongly urge people to do so. The penalty for me is going to be getting Republican Party junk mail for the next year or two, but
right,
that's a cross
right
all there.
Yeah.
But in any case, you know, I would be thrilled if Ron Paul were the Republican nominee for president in 2008.
Oh, yeah, so would I, yeah.
And I wish him nothing but the best.
Well, we have closed primaries here, which means that if you're not registered Republican, you can't vote for Ron Paul in the Republican primary. Well, and since we don't have a Libertarian Party, there are many people that I know that are Libertarians that are registering as Republicans, so that at least they can have a positive effect on this whole thing, you know, influence rather, you know, in the voting system. I mean, even if he doesn't win, but if he garners a large number of votes, at least that would be that first step, that rung, because right now the Libertarians always get, you know, 1%, 2%, or 3% of the vote, depending on where it is. With rare exception, someone gets a higher percentage. But you know, he may, you know, right now, after the debates, when people are asked to instant message in, he gets a majority—not majority, but he gets the largest number of approvals than anyone else, and sometimes by 2- and 3-fold. Now, I think I know the reason for that, because people who instant message are younger people. You know, they're not the diehard old-fashioned Republicans who wouldn't do that. So, I mean, he's catering to an audience that uses that media, so he gets more of the votes. But it's still an indication that he's getting a following. So, is this not posing a problem for the Libertarian Party itself?
I think that to a certain extent, no. I think in the short term, it has presented a minor problem in the short term for the Libertarian Party, and I may add other Libertarian organizations. I had someone from another Libertarian organization call me earlier this year and ask me if fundraising was down in the LP because of Ron Paul, and that person indicated to me libertarian-friendly organization, I should say, that he thought that their organization was being impacted in the short term by people who were donating money to Ron Paul. But I think in the long run, no. I think that the Ron Paul campaign in the long run will be a net positive for the Libertarian Party and for libertarianism generally. And it may be that some of the resources are being tilted more toward Ron Paul in the short term, but hopefully we in the Libertarian Party and other Libertarian organizations will be able to capitalize on this even after the Ron Paul campaign has ended.
Well, that's true. You know, when you think of it long term, if someone says, "Well, are you a libertarian? You know, what party are you with?" You say, "Well, I'm a libertarian." They'll say, "What's that?" You can say Ron Paul. At least they have someone to identify with, whether they agree or disagree with him, and you're not placed in that kook category, the fringe category. You're more mainstream, and I guess he does bring us more mainstream, doesn't he?
I would say in many respects he does, yes.
Yeah. We have another note here. It says, I think we need to team up with the Constitution Party. If we have no Libertarian candidate, then we support the Constitution Party and vice versa. What do you think of that comment?
Well, I think it depends. I think that yes, we agree with the Constitution Party on many economic issues. There are many social issues in which we do not agree with the Constitution Party. And also, the Constitution Party is certainly highly theological. I mean, there are both religious people and non-religious people within the Libertarian Party, and that's not the case, near as I can tell, in the Constitution Party. It is somewhat theocratic, is my understanding anyway. So, to me, it would depend on the candidate ultimately. But just like with the Greens, we agree with the Greens on some issues, and we don't on other issues. It's the same with the Constitution Party, except it's different issues we agree on or disagree on. But certainly, all minor parties need to work together on issues that affect all of us. Ballot access certainly being one of those issues.
Right, and I recall when I ran for office in the year 2000, I had occasion to speak to someone in the Constitution Party, and they made it very clear that they were basically a theocracy. And I was really surprised to learn that. I said, this day and age in this country, you know, we have a party that's going, you know, to touting to be a theocracy based on biblical scriptures and whatever. And I agree. I think that would be a big mistake if we aligned ourselves with them, because they're just basically issues that we agree we are in concert with, but philosophically, I don't think we're on the same page with them.
You know, I think by and large that's correct. Again, I'd like to work with them on ballot access issues,
right,
other issues in which we agree, but there are going to be issues, numerous issues, with which we will disagree, it's just how it is.
Yeah. Now, we still have about 10 minutes or so airtime. Is there any subject that you think that is critical that we should place on the air at this time, Bill?
Well, I would say that, again, the ballot access situation, not just in Oklahoma, but the Libertarian Party is fighting ballot access battles in several states right now. I think that one state where we are nearing completion, but it's been a long, expensive haul this year, is North Carolina, and I just wanted to tell people about that situation. In North Carolina, while the state legislature did not, unfortunately, change the egregiously high number of signatures that a party has to gather in order to get on the ballot, they did do one thing, and that was lower the voter retention, or the party retention requirement, from 10% of the vote for president or governor to 2% of the vote for president or governor.
Yeah, that's a step in the right direction.
Close to what we're trying to do in Oklahoma, except in Oklahoma it would be for any statewide office in either of the last two statewide elections. But a very exciting thing in North Carolina, we're close to successfully completing the petition drive there. Michael Munger, who is the chairman of the political science department at Duke University, is going to be our gubernatorial candidate, and he and the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate should be the only candidates on the ballot for governor of North Carolina next year.
I
am extremely hopeful that he will earn at least 2% of the vote for governor, and in that case, then
right,
the Libertarian Party will be a qualified party, I'm pretty sure, for
that's
the first
great
time ever.
That's great. That's fabulous.
North Carolina.
Right. How many states will the Libertarian Party be, will the Libertarian candidate be represented in the next election, general election?
Right now, I would say that we are shooting for 48. Now, this is going to depend. The real answer is I don't know for sure. It's going to be a function of how much money we raise. I mean, at this point, we could be looking between now and next Labor Day, if we do 48 states, that is, do all 48 states for the presidential ticket, the ones that would be left out would be West Virginia, the District of Columbia, which of course is not technically a state, and Oklahoma. We're working on this initiative. I don't think our presidential ticket will be on the ballot in
right
Oklahoma,
yeah,
in 2008. But if we do the other 48 states, and we're already on in 27, I believe, at this point. I believe that's the figure. We just completed Arkansas.
Great.
So I believe we're at 27 right now, and North Carolina would be 28 when that gets done. And there are a lot of states where we can't start yet. We can't start until sometime in the new year. I think if we raise enough money and get enough of a volunteer effort from our members, I am cautiously optimistic that we'll have our presidential ticket on the ballot in 48 states next year. But there's a long way to go between now and
right
then, and a lot to do between now
right
and then.
Is there a Libertarian candidate right now that's running that has national prominence and you think stands a chance of attracting at least a good portion of the vote, or a good minority portion of the vote at this time? Is there anyone standing out in your opinion?
Well, I think right now I can't say that anybody seeking the nomination right now is a household name. If there is a person, probably the highest name ID of all of the candidates right now might be Wayne Allen Root. It's not certain that he is definitely going to run or not at this point. It's not entirely clear, I think, but he probably has the highest name ID. But is there anybody who has high name ID among the general public right now seeking the Libertarian nomination for president in 2008? I'm afraid the answer right now is no.
Yeah, now there's that billionaire that's running that's converted to the Libertarian Party, but it's not a Libertarian Party. You know, I interviewed him, and I can't think of his name right off the top of my head. I think my Sunday night I had a blank out. But and in fact, he spoke here in Oklahoma and didn't do too well because of his philosophically, he was not a Libertarian, but he wanted to the Libertarian nomination, and he had the money to go with it. He didn't have the name recognition, but he had plenty of money. But I he may have dropped out altogether, and I just cannot think of his name. Oh my goodness gracious!
You're Daniel Imparato.
Oh yes, Imparato. That's his name, right? In fact, I interviewed him twice on the radio, and I couldn't remember his name. Isn't that horrible? My goodness gracious! This is what age does, I guess. But
I have my own senior moments once in a while.
Oh geez, that, you know, especially when you're on the radio, you don't have room for human error here, you know. I can't turn it off for a second and look through my notes and come back and make believe nothing happened. But, I interviewed him twice, in fact. He called a second time and wanted to be interviewed a second time. And he was no more Libertarian the second time than he was the first time when he was running as an independent.
Right. That has been the comment of some people. And I don't personally know the extent of Mr. Imparato's wealth. But at the end of the day, the Libertarian Party is going to nominate a Libertarian.
That's
to
correct.
Carry its message forth for president. And if somebody has celebrity status and wealth on top of that, that's great. So much the better. But at the end of the day, it's ultimately the choice of the delegates at the convention. But I've been around the LP long enough to know that whoever gets the presidential nomination is going to have to be highly Libertarian. That's
right.
For sure.
Right. Right. Well, Bill, we're approaching that time. Do you have any closing comments? Do you want to give us any websites to look at, something for our listeners to think of? And you're more than welcome. We have about 7 or 8 minutes to go, but if you want to sign off, that's fine also. I'll leave that entirely up to you.
Well, I just wanted to say thanks for having me. And again, anybody who is not a Libertarian Party member, please join. We are, again, fighting the ballot access battles and trying to recruit members and candidates at a furious pace because 2008 is just around the corner. And so please, if you are Libertarian, even moderately Libertarian, please, we'd love to have you join the Libertarian Party. And of course, if you're highly Libertarian, so much the better. But please, there's plenty of room to grow and things to do within the Libertarian Party. You can take a look at our website at lp.org. And again, our 800 number, if you're interested in getting an info pack, 800-ELECT-US is our toll-free phone number. So send us a message on from our website or give us a call, and we'll be back in touch with you with information on the Libertarian Party. Please join us. We are trying to rebuild liberty, both economic liberty and civil liberties in the United States in the way that our founding fathers envisioned.
Okay. Bill, I want to thank you again so much for being part of our program today. You were very insightful and very informative. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot. I do hope I get that email from you so I can send you that T-shirt, and maybe someday I'll meet you personally and we can sit down and have a good chat.
All right, that'd be great. I look forward to it. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you, Bill. Good night now.
Take care. Thank you.
Folks, that was Bill Redpath, William Redpath. He's a national chairman of Libertarian Party, and also he's on the board of directors of fairvote.org. Increasing the ballot access for voters, making it fairer. And he's a proponent of the proportional voting system, which means that if you run as a third party, whatever that third party might be, and you get 10% of the vote, that means 10% of the legislature would be of that party persuasion. And just think of the logic behind that. I think that's, I've never thought of that before. Oh, and by the way, we do have a note here, an instant message, which I did not get to. I'm awfully sorry. And I think this is, again, from Ted from Missouri. Why is there LP presidential candidate? Why is there LP presidential candidate when we are not on all 50 states? wouldn't those candidates be better off running for state office? That has been a point of contention, Ted. Is it Ted? Let's see. Your name is Ted. I'm sorry, I forgot your name already. But I'm not certain. That has been a point of contention ever since I've been with the Libertarian Party, and that's been over about 20 or 30 years. There are those who feel that we should not be running anyone for U.S. The U.S. legislature or nor president, but run only for local office. And in other words, let's start with the city council, start with small town mayors and whatever, and build up the base that way. And there's a lot of value behind that. For example, I would stand here in the state of Oklahoma infinitely better chance of attracting votes if I ran locally and went door to door and had an opportunity to explain my position on the issues, on local issues to people. They would see past the Libertarian Party, wouldn't be so inquisitive about the party and whether or not we're a fringe bunch of kooks or whatever. And I just stand a better chance. And that's where we're getting, we're increasing our numbers at the lower offices. So I can't disagree with that. And the question is, how is the Oklahoma ballot access doing? We don't know yet. It's too early. It looks like we are getting the money that's required for it, and we will make that, and we will have petitioners out there, and they will hustle. I think we're going to get it. I think it's going to be voted on, and I think it's going to pass. I am really optimistic about that, and I can't wait. I will run for office. How about that? Okay, and I want to thank everyone for writing in, calling in. No one called in, but people did write in. And I want to thank Bill again for being part of our program today. I certainly like the idea of proportional voting. I think that's a terrific idea. That means if you get 1% and there's one way to proportion that 1% in legislature, you'll be 1% of legislature, which would be impractical. But 10%, if you got 10% of the vote, at least you can say, well, we are going to have one person, maybe out of, 10% means they're going to have one person out of 10 is going to be of that political persuasion and at least represent that political philosophy. And I think that's a strong, strong incentive to vote for a person, even if you think the person's not going to win. And that's what I liked about the approval voting system. At least you stand a chance of winning. And in proportional voting, you stand a chance of winning. Please go to this website of FairVote, FairVote.org, and read about it. I think you'll be impressed. I'm very impressed. I'm very encouraged when there are people like Bill Redpath who are intelligent, well-spoken, thought out the issues, and are individual responsibility and freedom individuals. I just makes me feel so good, like I'm not alone in this whole deal. So, Bill, I appreciate that very, very much. I hope to see you soon, and I hope to hear from you again. At this time, I would like to mention that we will be live again Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m., and we will post our subject on, I think our subject might be freedom versus democracy. We'll be talking about that. Check our blog from our website for our listing, and I'll be posting that tomorrow. Right now, oops, there we go. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com or phone in your questions to 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. And remember, folks, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, and that will be Thursday at 6:30 a.m. Central Time here in the good old USA, stay well. Stay tuned.